Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse with Dr. Don McDonald. This show is for vitalistic chiropractors that want to take their practice to a new level. Whether that is higher volume, less stress, more congruency, or just want to continually learn and evolve. Every Wednesday, I will be bringing you an interview that will provide you with either mindset or strategies that will help you overcome your underdog curse. Whether you're plateaued, afraid to fail, or stressed out due to overwhelm, this podcast will show you how others have overcome their challenges. Make sure to go to www.drdonmcdonald.com where you can sign up to get notifications when new shows are released and see previous ones you may have missed. I hope you enjoy the show and don't forget to crush the curse. Are you a people pleaser? I know I sure am. And when you mix that with being a chiropractor, it can create a lot of trauma. I know firsthand, it can wear away at your health, your relationships, and your practice. I term this the underdog curse, and I've spent the last 15 years coming up with a solution. My book, The Underdog Curse, was written to help others live a more authentic life. This is very challenging if you're externally influenced. When you take an externally influenced person and have them try to spread the message of chiropractic, it can be very challenging. If you'd like to get back to who you really are, regain your health, strengthen your relationships, and increase your worthiness, please visit Amazon.com and pick up your copy of The Underdog Curse today. Remember, if we take the time to nurture ourselves, we are much stronger at serving others. For chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors. Hello and welcome back to our next episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse with Dr. Don McDonald. Today I have a really special guest. He came from homeless to having a very successful podcast. It's helped a lot of people grow their podcast and it's helped a lot of people on Facebook and social media. And he's also helping me. So I want to welcome Luis Condon to the call. How are you today?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you, Don. And thank you everybody who's tuning in. Really looking forward to being able to share my own underdog story and some of the challenges and ways that I've found to kind of overcome some of those challenges and even what I'm dealing with currently, because there's always more, isn't there?
There is always more. So I was really super interested in when first I kind of reached out to you to help me get this podcast off the ground, which I really appreciate it. But just listening to your podcast and listening to some of your stories, I was like, wow, for, you know, the Breaking the Underdog Curse, you have a pretty amazing story. So I was wondering if you could share a little bit about your history with our listeners.
Yeah, I definitely have been gifted with an underdog type story, but also really been fortunate to be given a lot of opportunities to kind of overcome. And for me, I was born in Medellin, Colombia, in the 1980s, which was the height of the cocaine cartel. And Colombia was kind of the number one place in the world for cocaine and Pablo Escobar. And my mom was murdered when I was 5 years old. And prior to that, my mother was a drug addict who was a very wild, party woman, 25 years old with three kids and no dad there and no education for her. And so I didn't have a father, and I just had my mom, who was very absent and very dazed and confused, so to speak there.
Yeah.
I realize it's like a movie reference or music reference, but it's not the dazed and confused like the movie, because she was very lost. When I was five, she was murdered for some drug debts, and I was left homeless for the following few years. And through kind of a really fairly complicated story, I was put into an orphanage by my own father, who I'd never met and had never heard anything good about. Then I was adopted, came to the United States. And, you know, in psychology, psychologists say that those first 8 years of your life really form a lot of who you are and your belief systems. And I was incredibly traumatized by that experience that I had as a kid, and really struggled with my sense of money and my sense of feeling like I was worth it, or like I had enough monetarily and financially. Even though I came to the United States and had these like amazing parents, I really struggled with that for a long time.
That's tough because when I wrote my book, I talked about how I felt like an underdog in my head, even though really from the outside, listening to your story, I had no trauma. I almost was like over babied as a child. And then that made me kind of feel like an underdog, but you definitely were not babied.
Yeah, we're like that, aren't we? We hear these stories in our own heads about who we should be or how well we should be along our path. And those stories sometimes really hold us back from really enjoying the success that we have. And, it's kind of interesting that recently in the news that there's the guy from Linkin Park, very successful music band. You would think that the guy had everything and he hung himself not that long ago.
Yeah, I heard that.
And last night I was, for some reason last night I put on this Netflix special, or it was an ESPN special that the Netflix has, and it's about O.J. Simpson. And the story really starts off early though, where, you know, O.J. wins the Heisman Trophy and then he gets drafted and he's such a good player. And then he starts doing movies and product launches and marries this beautiful woman and everybody loves him and he's got this incredible house. And you get the sense as they're telling the story, though, that O.J. Simpson in his head consistently felt like maybe he wasn't quite good enough. Like, yeah, he didn't completely fit in to the society that he had made it into. Like they showed this interview with him and they're asking him, you know, like, well, you're dating a white woman. Why is that? And it's like, why is an interview person even asking that? You know, and he's having to defend that. Like, he's good enough for that. And I think a lot of us carry that. We might not take it to the O.J. Simpson extreme,
yeah.
But we carry that in our own heads. Like, am I good enough? Do I deserve this? Have I achieved everything? I mean, look at other people. They've done better.
Right. No, I know. And that's the thing, is then you feel bad about yourself. And that's part of the whole the idea of this podcast, is that we kind of want people to kind of think what they would really like in their life. Like, what would they truly like? And are they doing stuff because they think they're expected to do it from other people or family members? Or do they not do it because they just don't think they're worthy of it?
It's such a, you know, it is such a complex thing to really figure out, to really know. I mean, it feels like such a conundrum that you're asking such a big question. Mm-hmm. And that takes some really deep soul searching.
Let's go into your story. So, you know, we know you kind of came up and you're in a pretty tough environment. How did you end up being homeless before you started to kind of turn things around?
Yeah. So when I was 20, maybe 25, 24, I guess, I got a job working for the nation's largest research project on marital success. I was 24, you know, wide-eyed and bushy-tailed and excited about kind of everything, and very into making bold claims and, you know, doing things that just kind of like were like, wow, I can't believe he said he was going to do that. And he shouldn't have been able to do that, because I got a job working for the nation's largest research project on marital success and research on what it takes to have a thriving relationship. At the time, I had a bachelor's degree, but the job that I ended up having, it was one of two in the whole nation, because this was a nationwide research project. It was probably like a $10 million, $20 million research project, government funded. I really should have had more degrees, but through circumstance and just my own making it happen in some ways, I got this really special job, absolutely loved it. It was the most miraculous thing that I've ever experienced as far as work goes. And then that job ended. It was a contract position. It was a research project, and all research projects have a beginning, a middle, and an ending.
Yeah.
And we had reached the end. And after that, I didn't know what to do with my life. And I almost think of it as having like a miniature midlife crisis. Mm-hmm. Because there I am, close to being 30 years old, had one of the most amazing jobs, had had my first really serious relationship, had bought a home with my partner, had been a co-parent for, about 5 years. And this job ended, and now I didn't know what to do with myself. And I tried applying for jobs that were of the same caliber that I had previously had, but they all required that I had a PhD degree, which I didn't have. Okay. And so I kind of spun out, and I guess when we spin out, sometimes we go to what we know or what we're used to. And my spinning out looked like not being very dedicated or fully committed in my relationship. So I didn't step out or anything. I was faithful, but I got lazy. And I didn't really want to apply for jobs. I started losing hope. Like, okay, if I've had this job and I can't find it again, what do I do now? And so my relationship ended. I caught my girlfriend cheating. So that ended the relationship, which means that I stopped being a co-parent to a child that I really loved. I had to move out of my own home. And then I kind of just didn't know what to do with myself. And I ended up sleeping on my friend's couch, living off my savings, and essentially became homeless again and burned through my savings. And I think a lot of us at some point maybe get there where we break down like that.
Yeah, totally. And when did the kind of rock bottom hit where you started to kind of, people change for inspiration or desperation. Which one was it for you? Probably desperation.
It was definitely desperation. I got to a point where I really couldn't afford my life, even though I didn't have any expenses. Like, you still have to get food.
Yeah.
And, as a former student and somebody who had owned a home, like, I had bills and I wasn't paying them and they were just piling up. I'm really sorry about this other dog in the background. There's a big dog here who I'm staying. He'll stop barking, but yeah. So what I got to a point where I guess I just kind of hit rock bottom. Like, okay, here I am. I'm a guy who's helped coach and educate over nearly 300 married couples. I've traveled the world, speak two languages, have a bachelor's degree, have this incredibly rich history of coming from another country and really suffering and overcoming that challenge. And what do I have to show for it? And I guess the desperation came in from that place of, I'm sick of this. I'm not living up to the standards that somebody who's been gifted with my life should live up to. And then I really started pushing forward and tried to start my own business and struck gold, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, was there a pivotal moment, or was there a time that you remember that you made the decision?
Well, the really pivotal moment came at a point when I actually was really kind of turning my life around. I got a job that, again, I didn't really have the qualifications for. I guess I've been really fortunate that people will see more in me than I see in myself, which has really been really helpful. So I got a job. I became a director of a nonprofit. I was managing three homeless shelters, a multi-million dollar budget, about 40 or so staff, and it's like 24-hour kind of staff situation. And I was working 60, 70, 80 hours a week and getting burned out. And I met this wonderful woman who is now my fiance. But at the time, she was just somebody I had a crush on. And she kept pointing out to me that I seemed really exhausted, that I seemed burnt out, that I seemed like I was kind of burning on both ends. And I was. And at some point, her and I started to have a relationship and started dating. And she convinced me to quit my job and that I really needed to pursue my entrepreneurial dream of, being a coach and being a mentor, and that I could actually make a living doing it. And here I was, a guy who had formerly been homeless and formerly kind of lost everything financially, and was now, had a nice little pot of gold in my savings, had a job that, hey, even though it's 60, 80 hours a week, at least I'm working and I'm making a living. And I can proudly tell you, you know, hey, I'm a senior director of this nonprofit and here's what I do. Compared to before, it's like, well, I'm a guy with a bachelor's degree sleeping in my car. And So it's very threatening to have somebody tell you that you can live your dreams and that you can leave the security blanket that you've created. It's very wonderful to have those blankets, and I think we should have them. It's scary to have someone else tell you that, you know what, you can risk it all. but it helps if it's a beautiful woman that you're in love with.
No doubt. That's the good motivation for everyone, to pull your socks up. So what are the first couple steps? How did you find out what did you want to do? You want to be a coach, but did you kind of know what you wanted to coach people on or how you're going to get the message out there?
I wanted to coach people in their relationship arena because that's what I had done before. But I just didn't know how to build, you know, doing something professionally for a company is one thing. Doing something professionally for yourself as a freelance worker is a whole nother world.
Yeah.
Where in the company, all the couples were funneled to me. My daily tasks were somewhat scheduled to me from my work. I was provided an office, a phone number, a computer, internet, a team, a staff, and a paycheck, regardless of what's happening. You do it on your own. You become now your own recruitment team, your own marketing team, your own website designer. Like, you become everything. And that's where I struggled, but I guess I was very lucky and struck gold, so to speak, here, because I was with a woman who understood how to set up some of the marketing, how to set up a website, and she helped me structure that so I could have a business. And I ended up leaving the company I was working for and went full time into the business and started profiting. And it's a funny thing sometimes when we start doing the things that we're kind of invited to do or the things that scare us, it seems like somehow, whatever you want to call it, like God or some sort of energy or force is also somehow guiding you. Because through that process, I was guided to podcasting. I was guided to learn about social media and introduced to some really fantastic people. And I stopped being a coach and started applying my relationship skills to building profitable relationships and building a profitable podcast. And so my life really took a turn in a way that I didn't expect it, but it started with an invitation and following that invitation and stepping out on a ledge and trusting it.
That's awesome. And maybe you could tell a little bit the listeners about your podcast. I love it, The Thriving Launch. It's just maybe explain how that started and how quickly that grew and what's going on with that now.
Yeah, I created a podcast. The first one is called Lasting Love Connection. It was a podcast all about having lasting love. Then throughout that process of building that company up and understanding what it took, my partner and I discussed the idea of having a business-based show, which once you run a business where you talk about the same thing every single day, sometimes you yearn for a variety or to showcase your other talents.
Yeah.
And so we started a business podcast to allow us to have business conversations and, kind of showcase our business skills. And through that process, that's when the podcast, the Thriving Launch podcast, which released, the Thriving Launch Company was released, and everything that's related to Thriving Launch was released. So that was a really wonderful process to go through that. And I'm really astounded by how taking one step, like listening to someone that was encouraging me to leave a company and leave the comfort of a company, how taking that courageous step kind of leads into these other really incredible things that have happened to me now.
Yeah. And just, I wonder if you'd have any advice for people out there, if they're at that same cusp you were, where maybe somebody's believing them, or maybe they just are believing in themselves for the first time. And they're kind of having that fear to take the first step. Cause I noticed you said it all was based on the first step, right? Cause if you never take the first step, then you're not going anywhere. So how would you kind of coach someone or give someone advice about how you did it?
Yeah. I don't know if this is a direct answer to your question, but I have a feeling it'll loop back around Mm-hmm. I always have this feeling that somehow things are interrelated, even though they don't seem that way. So one of the things that has really been happening to me recently in regards to my own personal growth is I've been thinking a lot about how a lot of us sometimes stay stuck wanting something, but we don't notice that the thing that we want or the opportunities and possibilities that we're desiring are completely available to us in the moment. And I've been thinking a lot about how we seem to have programs in our heads that tell us that something isn't possible or available to us. And so we negate the opportunity and possibility when it's presented because we kind of have a blinder onto it, or we have a story that makes us deny its existence even when it's in front of us. And I don't know if that makes sense to you listening, but so to paint that a little clearly for you, I'll go back to an experience that probably most of us can really relate with. When I was a teenage boy, I really believed that girls probably wouldn't like me. I believed that I wasn't really the type of guy that a girl could really like. And even though there was girls that liked me, I always kind of kept wanting the girls that
didn't want you.
Like me back. Now, the conundrum here that's interesting to me is there was a lot of girls now that I look back and I go, why didn't I notice how awesome she was? Gosh, she was a cute girl, you know, and we'd say hindsight, perspective is hindsight is 2020, right?
We look back.
But the thing is that I had belief systems that told me I can't really have the kind of girl that I want. Getting a girlfriend is really difficult. Pretty girls are hard to get. Why does he have that kind of girl while I don't? Only if I had that, I would be happy. And so all these belief systems. And so then my mind, in my head, did everything possible to make sure that that belief system stayed true. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with our wishes, you know. So some of us want more money, some of us want more success, some of us want more attention. But then when we're getting the attention, we're like, no, but it's not the right attention. When we get paid, we go, but that's not the right kind of money. Like, I should be a millionaire. Or we get a client and we go, well, that's not the right kind of client. You know, I need a bigger client. And so I'm not meeting up to my standards. I'm not meeting up to my wishes. I should pursue my dream, and having a small WordPress site hosted on a WordPress website, that's cool, but it's not enough. That's not really it. So we hold ourselves back from ever accepting the possibility or taking the small steps towards it, or we stay stuck in taking baby steps towards it because we believe that we can't really have it to begin with. And so we never really do end up having any version of it. We just kind of stay stuck with the wanting.
Totally. And how did you become more aware of that, those opportunities?
Coaching, I think, is the best way to do that. I really believe that if you have a desire and you have a passion and a drive for something, you have essentially that desire and that passion makes you like kindling. Mm-hmm. But kindling cannot be lit on fire unless it's hit by fire, right? A piece of kindling will never light on fire unless you put it next to a fire or in a fire.
Right.
I could even throw gas on a piece of kindling and it's not going to light on fire. I need the spark and I need the flame to help ignite it. And so if we want to make that shift or that change, I think one of the fastest way to do that is to find a way to put ourselves next to the fire. And we can put ourselves next to the fire by reading books, watching movies, talking to people who are already doing what we want to do, hiring a coach who's already doing what we want to do, but as much as possible, putting ourselves near the fire to whatever degree we can possibly do.
That's cool, because you hear a lot of all the successful peoples and my mentors, down the road when I was been learning, it seems like they all got lit on fire by someone else. Like someone was inspiring to them, which got them fired up. So that's a really good advice. Now, how do you keep inspired? You know, like, you know, there's one thing kind of getting out of the doldrums, but what happens when you kind of get into that comfort zone? How do you take it to the next level? Because sometimes part of that underdog curse is just going, you know, I'm no longer an underdog, so I don't really want to stand out, and I'll just kind of, I can pay the bills, so I'm kind of in that comfort zone. What have you done in the past to kind of make sure you keep growing?
I think that life trains us to be comfortable with what we're used to, and whatever has been the most predominant in our life tends to be what we tend to go back to. And so it's, I was watching an interview with Mike Tyson not long ago, and it still stands out in my head, where he talked about being the champion, the heavyweight champion of the world, the youngest guy to ever have that title, to defend that title. And he said he got to a place where, you know, he was not taking care of his health the way that he had when he was trying to become the champion, and he wasn't following the same regimens and routines, and he got cocky about it. Like, well, I'm the champion, man. I've defended this. Ain't nobody going to take this. I don't need to work as hard anymore. And then we all know what happened to Mike Tyson, right? He kind of went back to his old situation where he ended up in jail and lost all his wealth. And a lot of us kind of can have a tendency to be pulled back into the life that we had. Just like, even though I was a guy who at 28, 29 years old, had a bachelor's degree, spoke a couple different languages, had worked for the nation's largest research project on marital success, over 200 couples seen, I was celebrated in the nation as one of the best people at that role, and given a special role that only two people in the whole country had. And once that job ended, it was like I didn't know what to do with myself. And I think success is very much the same way. We reach this pinnacle of success, and now what do we do with ourselves? Mm-hmm. You know, how do we find a new meaningful dream again? Or how do we revamp the dream so that we can keep going? And, you know, in all honesty, I don't know really what the answer is. Arnold Schwarzenegger says, stay hungry, you know, mm-hmm. and that's a classic film. With Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he's a bodybuilder and he's having this success, and it's in the film. He's basically playing himself, and he has a buddy who keeps asking him, like, man, how do you keep having that drive and that success? And, you know, how do you keep doing that? And Arnold Schwarzenegger says, I live in a home that's worth way less than I'm worth. So every day when I go home to it, I'm reminded of what I want to achieve. You know, I don't buy all the fancy things that I could, so I'm constantly reminded of where I came from, and I make myself stay hungry. And I think that if we want to continue to have that drive or that zest for life, it's really important to have successes and wins. And it's also really important to remember sometimes, what it was like when you didn't have those successes and wins. And I don't know any simple formula for that, you know, because I think that it's a very human thing to ebb and flow, or to ramp up and get excited and be driven, and then kind of go, wait, I'm not driven. What happened? And I don't know an answer to that, Don. I'm not sure what the solution is. If there's any way that we can consistently keep ourselves out of that human tendency to go into a funk and then come out of it.
Well, I think that's probably a good point, because part of the things I think would help people is if they stay kind of taking time to be more aware of what's going on in their mind, so that they're not being so influenced by their environment. Because like you said, if suddenly you hit success and everything was just about the, you know, the house and the cars, you know, that's one part of it, which is filling up your cup. But I think one of the other human needs is to contribute and to grow. And so I think that's probably just taking time to yourself and reflecting. I think a lot of people are so busy, they just probably don't spend enough time doing those things.
Yeah, I agree.
So in closing thoughts, is there any kind of parting words or parting advice that you might be able to give the fellow underdogs out in the world?
I read this book not too long ago. excuse me, I can't remember what it's called, but in the book, the guy talked about how he noticed that when he really kind of got backed into a corner, he would work really hard and work his way out and create these kind of monumental wins. And then he'd get comfortable and then he'd kind of get in a corner and then create these monumental wins. And we all have our own descriptions of what that corner is. It doesn't have to be me sleeping on the couch or in a park. Sometimes that corner is, I didn't have 10 clients this week, you know, so I feel like I'm not as successful. So next week we go out and get 12, 14 clients. And then the next, you know, week or whatever, we might only have like, man, I did so well. I worked so hard, so cool. And then we kind of coast with that. And then we realize, wait, I just went 2-3 weeks and I only had 4 clients because I was riding on the success, but I wasn't working to that same degree. And he kind of started analyzing and asking himself, well, how can I recreate that person that has that thirst and that drive on a regular basis? And it was an interesting read, but it was, I guess for me, the takeaway from today's episode for me is remembering that person that was really driven and sometimes just actively saying, you know, hey, Luis, I want that guy to show up right now. You know, I know that we're doing really well. We just did a launch. We, you know, we just added a handful of new clients this month and I'm really satisfied with that. And how do I bring that guy? And Luis, I'd like for you to also activate that guy who gets kind of pissed and upset because he's not getting those results. And even though we have these results right now, I want you to call that guy forth so that we can even bring more results forward. So, let's bring forth that guy that felt so dissatisfied and upset in a time when I actually feel really satisfied and successful. And let's bring that guy forward right now. And so it's almost like trying to remember that you don't have to compartmentalize yourself, that it is possible for you to bring forth that driven person, even in a time when you're already doing really well. Like you can still do that.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think Tony Robbins always talks about we can all have multiple identities. And when you become self-mastered, you're able to pull on those identities depending on what you want. So I think that's a really good example of how to pull that hunger identity and not just get complacent after things kind of get comfortable. So thank you, Luis, so much for sharing your wisdom on our podcast today.
Thank you so much. Really enjoyed it. Thank you all.
And remember, everyone, crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.